And you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, the station that loves you. Following the Homegrown Garden Bluegrass Show, and what a beautiful song to be trailing after. We got a great show for you today, a number of guests, and Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with our very appreciated Kauai store.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
KKCR listens to you. If you'd like to make comments or provide feedback regarding our programming, or to suggest programming you'd like to hear, go to kkcr.org, click on the contact link, and take our listener survey. Or send us a letter at KKCR, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii 96714. Kauai Community Radio, listening to you.
For supporting Kauai Community Radio. And after the sound of that shofar, I want to say Happy Hanukkah. I think we're on like the third or fourth day, so that is great. Today's show, I'm really excited about what we have. We're going to be talking about governance and citizen action all the way to Malama Aina. I have a number of guests in the studio with me. One of our first speakers will be Alan Parakini. Alan, let's check you up. What role do you play in government?
I'm a member of the Charter Review Committee, a commission for Kauai County, and we're a group of seven volunteers, and we're tasked with proposing changes to the county charter, which then the voters decide whether to accept or not. We have no power to ram anything down anyone's throat. We meet monthly, and there are always interesting issues. We wish more people showed up.
Yes, and I'm happy to have you on the show now. I've been talking about this a bit. There's a survey that will be coming out about districting with the council, so we'll come to that in a little bit. I have a brother and sister in here, Journey and Rainbow Zephyr, and then also a colleague, Imani True. I'm going to speak to Journey right in this moment. What roles do you play in citizen activism?
In citizen activism, I started a youth council, the Kauai Native Youth Council, and I also protested against the 2491 bill.
You protested
for.
You are concerned about pesticide use in Kauai. Yes, you're very active in that movement, and you're probably a foot taller now.
Yeah.
And then Taki-san, Toma, what is Malama Aina? Just so the listener understands what we're talking about in this show.
Malama Aina, from my perspective, is this. Malama Aina means to be a good steward of the ecosystem. Very complex. The ecosystem is, you're talking about the land, the soil, talking about the mountains, talking about the Ahupua system, and you're talking about air, talking about the why, the water, and also, it's just as important, you're talking about the people and its culture. So it's all combined, it's part of life. And the whole focus of my life, most of it anyway, is to ensure that I put my time in to make sure the people of Hawaii, all cultures, are involved in taking care of the land. In other words, be a good steward of the aina. So the aina is very complex. It's just not the land or the farm or the mountains. It's all these.
Thank you so much. So we will be speaking today's show. We'll talk about this key opportunity of council districting, and we will touch on the understanding of the significance of recent court decisions in Hawaii. We'll be taking calls, and I'll let people know when's an appropriate time to call in for some of these. And I will check with Alan as we get there, if he has looked at any of these, because I know that you have been a journalist on court action in the past for actually pretty big newspapers. And with Journey, we are going to be looking at the court action taken mostly by indigenous youth at the federal level for their theft of y'all's future. And with Taki-san, we're going to be looking at a comparative view of the Malama'aina efforts, you know, particularly as they involve the youth across the islands. So, also, Marshall is back with us. Marshall, let me see that you're mic'd up.
I'm mic'd up.
Oh, are you?
Aloha.
There he is. And so you have been away. We all care about you and your family. You've lost a brother, so you went to take care of family. You've been gone for, I think, 7 shows. So.
You know, I felt that, too. Thank you, Felicia, and to everyone for all the good wishes while I was away.
Well, welcome home.
Thank you. There's nothing like coming home to Kauai.
Yeah. So were you paying enough attention? You were in that kind of triangle between Philadelphia, Baltimore, kind of New Jersey. Was much citizen-led activism evident in your areas that you were?
You know, I saw more turkeys and eagles than activists, really. I was in a rural and beautiful place for some of the time, and for some I was like in, well, red meat Maryland. So, okay. No, to me, you know, and I was more involved with family for the most
okay.
part.
Okay. Well, I know that you really have a focus on world issues and somewhat national. Did you see any Malama'aina efforts in the world or North America in this window?
Well, I mean, of course, we've got the Paris Climate Summit still going on, not quite done. And that's just an amazing thing to behold. As you have caught on, no doubt, it is unlike Kyoto in that it's not a treaty and can't be scuttled by Congress. So unlike Kyoto, we're not going to have an agreement with two of the biggest nations on Earth, the United States and China, not participating. Everyone's going to participate, and there's $100 billion involved, so that speaks, and I'm pretty optimistic about it. They say what they want to do is keep global temperatures from going no more than 2 degrees Celsius above the pre-industrial revolution levels.
Which still is significant. We have a caller that needs to go on the air real quickly, and then we'll come back to this. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you for holding.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Yeah, you're the first speaker that you introduced, yeah?
Yes.
The charter commissioner.
Yes.
Okay. I heard him say something about they don't have the power. But I guess it seems like they have the power to put things on the ballot, so that is power. Because if it was the other way around, we would have to get thousands of signatures. And we gotta make sure that we do it on the right way. So, I don't know. I kind of disagree with what he said. They gain more power, but in actuality, they have the power to put it on the ballot.
So thank you, caller, and we'll bring that up when it's his time. Thank you so much.
I hope so. He's listening.
He's hearing. He's smiling.
Okay.
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 Aloha.
Have a beautiful evening.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, and Marshall, thank you. And there was another big issue that came up in politics this past couple days. You were speaking about that before we came in.
You know what? Parts of our country have just become hysterical. It's sad and amazing to see. There are huge swaths of the population who now believe that we should not allow Muslims into our country, even United States citizens who have left and just want to come back. Even United
States...
Like
on vacation.
Yes, or military personnel, if they're Muslim. This is a proposal by Donald Trump. And unfortunately, it's being taken very seriously here and around the world. So as absurd and completely unworkable, not to mention un-American, a proposal as it is, it doesn't look good.
You know, as appalling as what Mr. Trump has said is, Marshall, he did clarify today that he does not intend for his policy to extend to Muslims who are already U.S. citizens or are already legally in the country. It was a natural first impression to draw yesterday when he popped it open. I did too. But he's tried to backpedal just a little bit today. But it's just appalling. It's appalling.
It harkens back to World War II and the things that Adolf Hitler was saying. That, to me, that's, I'll just be that strong, because that was all about not having Jewish people.
Well, yeah, so. Sure it does. He also wants to put identification, a mark on people's IDs if they're Muslim. You might as well stamp their arms.
And I wonder if our young people in the studio have that knowledge. In World War II, people of Jewish ancestry or belief systems in Europe had to wear a yellow Star of David everywhere they went, so that they were basically marked.
Not to mention 6 million of them killed.
Yeah, and 6 million others. So 12 million people were killed. So they all nodded their heads. Sometimes I have found that it's hard to teach all the history, and that piece gets left out. So that's a very big deal. And, so we're acknowledging that today on this program.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, really, I'm just putting out a prayer that something changes here. It's so overboard and unlike anything we've seen. The Republican Party, all of them have turned against Donald Trump on this. No one except his supporters seems to think that this is even an acceptable idea to throw out there. It is just beyond the pale.
So when you say big swath, we would just say a loud, perhaps semi-significant minority. It is certainly not all of Americans.
Donald Trump supporters, who continue to be Donald Trump supporters even after he has come out clearly with this, that is the vast majority of likely voters in the Republican nomination for the president. That's a big number of people. And I think he can go on saying things and doing things like this, and still that huge group of people supports him. That's not insignificant.
Oh, no, it's not insignificant that that's happening, for sure. I'm just trying to say it's not all of Americans. So,
no,
yes.
It is not all Americans.
It's not all Americans. I just want to be clear, because sometimes what I find is people are listening and they'll hear just a minute or two as they're bouncing through the stations. And so just wanting to put that clarification. But it actually flows in with the rest of this discussion today, because at some level we look at where demographics within the populations can get singled out and maybe disadvantaged. I do want to bring up some of the citizen opportunities that are on Kauai to interact with government about Malama Aina issues and other things. A very big thing that I only found out about today, and that's that Governor Ige and his cabinet will be at the Kauai Community College Performing Arts Center this Saturday. Did you know that?
I did not.
6:30 to 8 p.m. And so if somebody has something that's very important for them to get across, that means things that they're not, either that they're stoked about that the state government is doing, or different positions that they would like them to have, it might be a great opportunity for people to have a quality written statement that they bring in, and then pick a speaker or two to ask a key question or bring up a key concern, because it's very important that things end up on the written record for what has happened and what has come together as a representation of Kauai. I did last Thursday night go to the Navy's public outreach for their environmental impact statement for their military applications 2018 and beyond, and there was a room full of experts in there and specialists, but there was probably, my best guess was maybe 10 citizens. And so when people don't show up, and that had very, very little notification that I saw. I just saw it in the afternoon and went down there. But when people aren't there, then it looks like a soft reaction, and we will even talk about this when we're discussing the Charter Review Commission, that people on these groups can make the misaligned assessment that, hey, you know, if people cared, they would show up. They didn't show up, they must not care. It might be that they haven't heard about it. So this Saturday, Governor Ige, it's called Community Connection, Kauai Community College, 6:30 to 8:00 in the Performing Arts Center. I can never say a price on anything, but a person with no money would be able to go to that. And then, actually, that would be true for anybody on any of these things that I'm bringing up. And actually, when I was talking about the Navy event last week, in 2 weeks, Commander Bruce Hay will be on the show with us here, and I'm going to have two individuals, one from the South Side, Stephen Doy, who has a lot of concerns. He's a fisherman. And then Terry Lilly from the North Side, who has been doing marine watches, and his big concern is about the reef. And Commander Hay is very happy and willing to be having a discussion of this on the air. Tonight, the county transportation planner, Lee Steinmetz, and the Public Works Department will be having a meeting at 5:30 at the Lihue Civic Center in the Pi'ikoi building, and that's about pedestrian and bike lanes in Lihue. Lee will be our one of our guests next week. So the county is coming in next week. The Navy's coming in the week after. Also tonight in Waimea Canyon School Cafeteria from 6 to 8, there's a proposal up for using wastewater to irrigate the parks and help Waimea be greener. Both the biking issue and actually the Navy's environmental impact statement on what they do on the ocean is very much a Malama Aina discussion. And Governor Ige's can very much be a Malama Aina discussion if we choose to make it such. In these community announcements, I will share the sad news that Mary Thronis, who's 84 years old, she passed peacefully. I believe that was day before yesterday. She used to be our county council chair. She was the governor's liaison, I think, through three governors. And she was even a mayoral candidate for Kauai. So quite an activated citizen for looking at what happens, and, you know, mother and well-loved. So on that note, we're talking about county council people. Alan, what's up with the Charter Review Commission?
Well, the caller, whose voice I think I recognized, is correct when he says that the Charter Review Commission has the power, the ability, to put a charter amendment on the ballot. But I think it's important to remember that in the final analysis, there are three ways to change the charter. The first is the county council can vote to put an amendment on the ballot. Then the voters get to choose.
Let's tell them what the charter is.
The charter is essentially the constitution of Kauai County's government. It's the document that describes how the government will be organized, how it will operate, who has power to do what, where the money comes from, where the money can go. And then the provisions of the charter are put into force by county ordinances, which is what the county council can enact.
An ordinance is the county's word for law.
A statute.
The state, yeah. And the state has a statute, the federal government has a law, a county has an ordinance.
Fair enough.
Just in case people don't know.
And the second way that a charter amendment can be proposed is by the people, through the charter amendment initiative process, which is something there's been controversy about for at least the last year.
Do you want to say what that is, or
will I? Well, we probably would say different things. Not really. An issue arose last year about a charter amendment that, or what called itself a charter amendment that would have enacted a series of very harsh provisions relating to pesticides and GMOs.
It would have put the responsibility of the companies to prove that they're not damaging the communities around them, as opposed to the communities having to prove that they are. So it was a shift in responsibility.
Yes, it was.
But I wasn't trying to get specific on it. Right. Just
sure.
Yeah.
And the controversy that arose was over the issue of whether that particular initiative was a charter amendment. And there were a number of people, including myself, who argued that it was so specific and so much like an ordinance that it couldn't possibly be a charter amendment. And eventually, that view prevailed. And ever since, the Charter Review Commission, which, and this discussion began before I got on it, I would want to be certain people know, the Charter Review Commission has been deliberating a proposal, which we have voted to put on the ballot, that would add a definition of what a charter amendment is to the part of the county system of government, the charter. So there's no doubt what a charter amendment is.
Right. So it's adding clarity. And what I will confirm for you, in that particular charter amendment, it had a blend of what would be a charter piece and an ordinance. Again, that's a little more detail than...
I think that's right. I think that's
so
right.
It had the blend, and so this particular amendment says, okay, let's clarify it, and this is how we're clarifying
right.
it. And the piece where you and I are in a little bit of disagreement, though I'm not trying to argue it here, but it might be in alignment with what the caller was saying, is at that time it was 5% to the voters. So that means they got to go out and get about 8,000 votes, and it's a lot.
It is a lot.
It's a lot. And so when four people in a room can make a decision and say, let's put this on the ballot, or let's double that number. Instead of 8,000, let's double it, and we'll make it even harder for the citizens to do it.
I think your arithmetic is wrong.
Maybe it's 4,000 to 8,000. It might
I
be
4,000.
I have to
is.
Look. It doubles what it was. Okay.
Let's remember that before this came up, a charter amendment could be put on the ballot by a petition signed by 5% of the voters. But an initiative ordinance had to get 20% signatures of all registered voters. Our view was it was nonsensical for it to be easier to change the basic form of government than it is to enact an ordinance. So what we did was make the signature requirements equal. Yes, we raised the charter amendment one to 10%, but we reduced the initiative ordinance requirement by 50% from 20 to 10. So everything in life is a compromise, and I think all seven of us ended up with still having different opinions about what those percentages should be. We arrived at 10% for each. As a compromise that we thought best represented the interests
right.
of the people.
I'm just going to editorialize here for
ahead.
A moment. I think, oh my gosh, what are you guys thinking? Who's going to give away? Who's going to surrender their power? Anybody who has wisdom, they're going to go, okay, if we go from 5 to 10, 10% is almost unachievable. You know, it can be achieved, but it's not easy. So, I mean, for me, I would just vote no, because that whether we take the 20% down to 10 or we take the 5%, if they say no, then it stays at 5%. So I think you guys might have shot yourself in the foot on that one, but that's my editorializing.
Well, that the voters will tell us.
The voters will tell us. So the bigger one that we're here for today, because I'm just wanting to get to that, because there's a survey out, and
there
you
is.
Guys put a Survey Monkey out, and which means people can go in and vote. And we actually want people to do that, so that you're the chair of the subcommittee that's looking at districting for council.
Right.
So can you explain to the listener in basic terms what districting means and
sure.
what we have currently?
Right now, we have a system in which there are seven members of the county council All of them are elected at large, which means the entire electorate on the island gets to vote on each one. So when you go to the ballot box, as things stand, you can vote 7 times for county council. And whoever the 7 top vote getters are among the mass of people who are running, get on. But over many, many years, there's been controversy over whether that really represents the interests of local people, or whether it would be better to have at least some of the county council members elected on a district basis. In other words, if there were 3 districts, just a random
like our
choice, like our state representatives, then a mass of people in one part of the island would elect someone who represents just them. And you would then also have probably, although not necessarily, 2 or more people who would continue to serve at large. The voters have been asked whether they wanted to do this 3 times before, and they've said no every time. The most recent one was 2006. It lost by only about 250 votes. And when we started looking at it again, because we keep getting inquiries from people about this, when we started looking at it again, we realized that the 3 times before, there had been public meetings held, and passions ran very high in those public meetings, usually 3 of them, but very scant attendance. So the Charter Commissions had only the views of about 90 people, although those are 90 people with emphatic opinions. But it's still only 90 people. So we decided that the better way to go would certainly be to take public input, which we will do. But we also wanted to try to get a better sample of the opinion of the people out in the island. So we have put an online survey. It's accessible through the county website, which is kauai.gov. If you just want to go to the survey itself directly, you'll need a pencil and paper. It's www.surveymonkey.com, surveymonkey's one word, /R/ Kauai Charter Commission.
And it's on my Facebook page, Kauai Soapbox Facebook page, Alan's Facebook page?
I think so.
We'll make sure it is. We'll put it up again.
And there are 4 questions. The first question is, it asks you if you would like to change the way the county council is organized, or would you like to make no change? In other words, keep 7 seats at large. Then it asks you, would you like to have 7 districts? In other words, there would be
no... You would vote for only one.
You would vote for... Well,
only
not
one?
Necessarily.
Okay.
Not necessarily. That's where it gets complicated. There would be 7 districts, 1 council member for each district. Then there are various combinations. 3 districts, 4 at large. 4 districts, 3 at large. 5 districts, 2 at large. Then it gets complicated because Maui County and Hawaii County both have district councils, or a district system for their councils. In Maui in particular, all the voters get to vote on all the council members, even those who would represent a district in which the voters don't live.
So just to simplify it for listeners, part of the reason Maui is that way is because Maui County has Molokai, Kai'i,
right,
and Lanai. And so if they have something called apportionment, and that's a kind of complicated thing to go into, but like on Kauai, it doesn't seem that we would need that. You know, but it matters if we break it into 5s or we break it into 3s. So I'm looking at my younger people in case, like, there are people that this isn't super clear for. What this is saying is, do we have a North Shore representative? Do we have a West Side representative? How do we break it up? Because right now, I think we have 1 that's outside that Lihue Wailua area. Basically, it's always Lihue, you know, Wailua is where there's the deepest amount of people. They always get their people in there. And so it tends to not have representation that is particularly specific to some of these more outer-lying regions.
That's a fair statement. Now, where this gets more complicated is we also realize that there are models in which both anybody can vote for any district, the so-called at-large model, what we have now, or you can only vote for the council member for the district in which you live. You can also decide that you want to require, if we're going to have districts, that you want to require the council member to live in the district, or whether you don't. So we have, when you look at five options to start with in question one, but then you add, well, if you feel this way about that, then do you want to be able, how do you want to be able to elect them? It's going to require some analysis, and let me just make the pitch here that this survey will be successful only if people take it and participate.
That's right. And you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. We have a number of issues on the show today. Right now, we are talking with Alan Parakini, who is the chair of the subcommittee from the Charter Review Commission, looking about districting on the islands. And people might not think, oh, you know, the reason I think it gets voted no all the time or just people don't vote. There's a lot. It's so complicated that people don't really respond. And frankly, I don't think that the questions are pulling into many very important issues, because right now we have part-time. I mean, that technically our council members are paid as half-time workers. So many of them don't make enough money to really support their lives, so they have a straight job. So they're tired. They have potentially a conflict of interest. You know, they don't have as much time to go out and meet with other people. I think it'd be really important that there's more. Last week's council meeting was, I'm not even going to go into what happened, but it was certainly script-worthy programming. A lot of conflict that came up. But when we have these two-year terms, that's a very short amount of time. And when you have a short term for government, that means the person in there, they're not thinking long-term. They can't think long-term. They can't make a commitment there. And last Wednesday, we had yet another contractor coming in. It's like I feel like the county is outsourcing all their work, and we have an expensive county, more than we can afford to have. We have so many employees, but the thing is the laws they have to follow are getting more and more complicated, and modern technology and what's required is more and more complicated. But they had an economic consultant coming in, and just to even listen to some of the discussion that happened, like one council member, I think that was Council Member Hooser, said, can we look at 6 years out aged accounting? And that's any good business person looks at that. How much am I going to owe over time? How am I going to pay for it? Well, that's not even on the criteria. And anybody who drives a car knows that you're going down the road. You want to know how fast you're going and how much gas you got in the tank. And to me, those kind of things are really essential that we're able to look at. And I think that when we have short terms for these council people and they're expected to do this as a half-time job, we're setting them up for failure.
Well, I would agree with you that there is an institutional memory problem in Kauai County, caused by the fact that they all run for 2 year terms. So it's like the House of Representatives. Every 2 years, they're all up. They could all be voted out, or they could all be retained. And it's hard to keep a sense of logic and momentum in a system like that. That's really a different issue. Felicia and I do have a difference of opinion about whether her sense of part-time and full-time council members should have been in our questionnaire. And I would simply say that the four questions we're asking create a data set that has the potential to require very complex analysis. So my sense of what we're doing here is the people who respond will tell us in general terms what system they most prefer. Then it'll be up to us to write an amendment that would incorporate those issues, and we will have a lot of time for public input. And we have heard from you, Felicia. We understand what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I would say that the three members of the committee that are charged with doing this, none of us has made up his or her mind
right.
about this issue. I don't think anybody on the commission has. As far as I'm concerned, it's a total open slate.
Right.
In fact, as a voter, I might vote for no change. I don't know.
A lot of people. I just
don't know.
We have a caller who's got an opinion. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Well, no, thanks. Just back to the three members of the committee. Could you name who those three committee members are, Alan, please?
Sure. Pat Stack and Mia Ako are the other two members.
And Alan.
And myself.
Okay. And just one of the things that's kind of absent in the conversation is the because what we're talking about is potential large structural changes for
yes,
our
it
local
is.
Government, is the county manager issue and our strong mayor issue and how we might be able to look at the big picture again if we want to see some structural changes. And I think there's a number of reasons why we want to look at that, and we don't have to get into that. But I do think an analysis is important. And you mentioned, Alan, that the previous time that the districting question was put up to the voters, it was a very small percentage point difference between the pros and the cons. And there wasn't really much, if you will, education or outreach as to provide voters with a little bit of a background as to why this would be a good thing to consider or why not. And looking at the county manager issue, again, we're looking at information being put out there kind of in a vacuum and not looking at it in totality with the shift like districting and how we would potentially have to select if we wanted to go to a county manager, a mayoral position being the top vote getter or the chair, that is something to consider. You talked about that a proportionate issue. If we were to go into five districts or seven districts, it gets a little complicated, but the easy breakdown is three districts because of our already broken down jurisdictions for the House of Reps. And so it's easy for voters to get confused. It's easy for voters to, if you will, drift and not pay attention and just go along with either their favorite elected official, and that favorite elected official might say, oh, don't vote for this because of that, and they're going to follow right along. Or they're going to get right behind that favorite politician who says, yeah, we should have a strong mayor, and we should have seven council members who represent all of Hawaii. I would love to see the three districts be two-year terms and the four at large be the, if you will, four-year terms.
Yeah, me too.
Please participate in the survey. And then if we get that far, if we have only a very, very small turnout for this, it's going to mean that people aren't really thinking about districting that much. So if you feel strongly or even at all about this issue, the first and best thing you can do is participate in the survey. Now, on the issue of the county manager question, it's a little bit more complicated than life might like.
And it did come up.
It did come up. However, the county...
And it will come up.
Yes, but...
we have a number of structural issues
right.
that aren't being attended to, and it comes back down to, well, how do we make some changes? And when the power structure helps either... if you will, select those individuals that say yay or nay, and that's what happened last time with the county manager issue. The Charter Review Commission didn't even put it out there for discussion for the voters. It was kind of squelched at the committee level. And
well, here's the situation. Here's the situation with that. The county council decided a few months ago that they would appoint a committee of their own to explore the merits of switching to a county manager system.
Correct.
The Charter Review Commission on its last or agenda before last looked briefly at a proposal by one of our members to introduce a county manager system. Our feeling was this is already so complicated that if the Charter Review Commission and the county council start going to the voters with two competing proposals for county manager, it's going to confuse people even more. So we decided.
Let me ask you this, yeah. Alan. Why would it have to be competing? Why couldn't it be in tandem or a collaborative approach? Why does it have to be in opposition?
I understand that. The county council is the legislative branch of government. The Charter Review Commission is part of the administrative branch of government. And there is a kind of principle in the American system that the three branches, the third one being the judiciary, don't trump on one another's turf. I think there is a council member who has expressed some interest in having the Charter Review Commission get involved in the process of doing that. So that may happen, it may not. They have to take the first step. The council's got to decide what they want to do, if anything.
Right, and here's one of the things that I really appreciate about the Charter and the Charter Review Commission.
Caller, I appreciate your questions. I want you to kind of shorten them a little bit because
right,
I have...
Interrupt. I'll be glad to finish that. That is a kind of a hybrid of an administrative and legislative body. Again, you're not elected, but you do have your public meetings, and you are out there. I really appreciate that you guys decided to use technology with the SurveyMonkey to help assist with this outreach, because that's the critical part that often lacks. So I appreciate the fact that you guys are talking about it now, and mahalo to Alicia for bringing your guests on, and we'll carry on with this conversation. So mahalo to you guys, and aloha.
Take the survey.
Yes, and, you know, they need to have – is there an email address that people can call in for putting – because that seems kind of strikingly lacking, you know, or an address that probably needs to be put in the paper and published in a handful of different ways?
There will be a county news release on this out tomorrow or the next day. That will be sent all over the island, every imaginable place where – we're trying to talk to service clubs and whatnot. I suppose there is no we individuals on the commission do not have county email addresses. If people are really concerned and want to talk about this, I will lay myself down in the road and say you can email me. It's aparachini@parachinigroup.com, and that's aparachini. Please don't abuse it. It's my private email address, but I'm very interested in being as aware of what people think about this. I'm willing to take the risk of putting my own email address out there.
There, and just like in a follow-up with what I heard from him, is that there's an amazing amount of power from the Charter Review Commission. I will say, having gone to many, many, many of the meetings, not that big of changes have happened, but actually separating public works from the parks, separating human resources, those things grew the government
right.
really heavily. So I think that people really need to be showing up. I'm going to just briefly bring up these court decisions that were made that are huge, but I want to move on to Journey's story here, and then we will, if later in the show we have more time to talk about, like, the U.S. Supreme Court held that the Na'ihalpuni vote was not valid, and that was the voting has been stopped.
Actually, they declined to take the case, which is slightly different. They did not hear arguments and render a decision. They first, Justice Kennedy, who is the justice who has our part of the country on emergency duty, essentially, stopped the vote because he felt it was an issue that the court needed to consider. Then the full court declined to stay the order to halt the election.
So what does that mean? They declined. So is the election on or off?
I think this will strike people rightfully so as a small point. What was enjoined was counting the ballots.
Right.
I understand that the balloting has been extended by 3 weeks. Probably not a bad decision. If ultimately the count is allowed to go on, then there'll be that many more
right.
voters who represented. I think what would have to happen is somebody would have to go and ask the Supreme Court to take it as a case. And as
to
you
have
know,
it go forward.
Yeah, have it go all the way up. And as you know, that's a very long-term process. And their dance card for 2016 is almost completely filled already.
So the short piece, because we're talking about citizen activism, and we're going to move on to some exact citizen activism example here, but citizen activism in pushing against that to the U.S. Supreme Court has effectively blocked that for the time being.
It has. At the risk of setting something else off here, I think the fundamental issue that underlies that case is this. Can a government agency outsource an election to a nonprofit group it establishes for the purpose of avoiding constitutional requirements for representative voting? That, is, I imagine, is what Justice Kennedy was thinking when he issued the order. I'm not saying I do or don't agree with that. I will say, though, that it's a valid question that the Supreme Court should address.
Yes, thank you for clarifying that, because that is basically my simplistic way of saying these things is sometimes the government breaks its own laws about how they are supposed to behave. And I felt like the U.S. Supreme Court was saying, hey, this is a workaround of what is set up as the process.
I think that's exactly what they were saying.
And I think that the Hawaii State Court said the same thing when they invalidated the permit for the 30-meter telescope on Mauna Kea, because the Board of Land and Natural Resources just kind of did a little shoot from the hip behavior and saying, well, it's going to happen anyway, so we're not going to pay attention to whether these people have an intervention.
Well, that was the Hawaii Supreme Court that made that ruling, and the Hawaii Supreme Court gets to say they're the ultimate court at the state level. The only way that's going to go any farther than that is if someone can make the case that there is what's called a federal issue, something that would relate to the U.S. Constitution that the United States federal courts would get involved in. At the moment, the Hawaii Supreme Court has ruled unequivocally, the permits were improperly issued. End of story.
Right. So, and I watched that hearing with the Supreme Court, and I was jaw-dropped. I'm so unused to seeing the courts actually back up the common citizen. And that was an indigenous rights issue, but also very much, is the government doing what it's saying it's doing? And some of those same people, Deborah Ward was not, but Ku Ching was on both cases against the Department of Land and Natural Resources for being a poor steward of Pohakuloa, where the military is using that as a bombing range. And the courts sided with the Hawaiians and said, yeah, you know what? So this is going to shift our topic to our activists here. We have some citizen activists. We will begin with a song. We might have one call. We can take that call really fast to go on the air right now. And then we're going to hear from Rainbow Star, and we'll be learning about what the youth are doing. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, this is Auntie Louise.
Hi, Auntie Louise.
I just wanted to throw something else in the mix. You know, being an activist, it's hard to get a lawyer that will defend you in anything because they get their license from the state and the government. So they don't want to go against the government or whatever, you know. So it's really hard to find somebody to represent you, truly represent you, you know. I just wanted to throw that in the mix.
Thank you for throwing that in the mix. And that comes through so many times. People can't even get an attorney to take on either big development, the global corporations that put their boot print wherever they want, and the government, because it's the end of their career. So when we see people, even like Gerard Jarvis, who represented the Pioneer families, well, his career was shot anyway because of the Bishop estate problem. So he was able to just kind of do a Hail Mary pass, you know, but it's very, very hard to get people.
And all of those people people, they got deep pockets. You know, I've been two million dollar lawsuits that I had to go and beat the pavement and defend myself and pay out a lot of money, you know, to get the depositions, get all the paperwork. Thank God I had Harold that helped me, you know.
Brownstein?
A lot of those things, yes.
Yeah.
You know, and he's the only saving grace that we have. You know, that will help us.
Well, thank you.
The point that he could.
Thank you for sharing that. And now we're going to hear from Journey and Rainbow and Imani about Journey's got a lawsuit. He's one of 21 young people who have a lawsuit. Rainbow is going to begin a song that she wrote, and we're going to hear that. And then we're going to talk about these two young Lakota who are part of a lawsuit against the U.S. government.
And I want to thank them for stepping up and all the young people, because I'm getting old and I'm raising my grandsons. And so it's really good that the young people are stepping up and taking the forefront.
Well, mahalo, Auntie Louise.
Okay. Aloha.
Aloha. All right. So, Rainbow, are you ready? Say yes. They can't see you. Nod your head.
Yes.
Okay. So what's the name of your song? And tell us a little bit about it, and then we're really happy to hear it.
So my passion is music, and for me, youth activism is about action and following your passion. So to inspire people, I hope the song will inspire people and help each other and our planet. And the song is called People Help the People by Birdie.
And you are a freshman at Kanui Kapono, is that right?
Yes, and I'm 14.
Okay, so let's hear it.
Is hiding in that weak and drunken heart. I guess you kiss the girls and make them cry. Those hard-faced queens of misadventure. God knows what is hiding in those weak and sunken eyes. A fiery throng of muted angels giving love and getting nothing back. Oh, people, help the people. And if you're homesick, give me a hand and I'll hold it. People, help the people, and nothing will drag you down. Oh, and if I had a brain, oh, and if I had a brain, I'd be cold as a stone and rich as a fool. I turned all those good hearts away. God knows what is hiding in that world of little consequence behind the tears inside the lies. A thousand slowly dying sunsets. God knows what is hiding in those weak and drunken hearts. I guess the loneliness came knocking. No one needs to be alone. Oh, save me. People, help the people. And if you're homesick, give me a hand and I'll hold it. And will drag you down. Oh, and if I had a brain, oh, and if I had a brain, I'd be cold as a stone and rich as a fool. I turned all those good hearts away. your hand and I'll hold it. People, help the people, and nothing will drag you down. Oh, and if I had a brain, oh, and if I had a brain, I'd be cold as a stone and rich as a fool that turns all those good hearts away.
Wow, mahalo.
That was beautiful, Rainbow. Did you say Thank Birdie you. Wrote that?
Birdie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was really, really lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you. And your people from your family in South Dakota, looks like some are on the line. And Tucson, Arizona, too. I got a whole lot of listeners in Tucson. I don't know if... is that from you guys? I don't know. A whole big cluster. Hi, Tucson. So, thank you. Thank you so much for that song.
You're welcome.
And Journey... I'm going to just tell the listener a little bit about you because my observation is you're a bit humble, so I'm just going to say it. Journey Maniwanji Itacha, I don't say it right, the Itacha Zephyr. You're 15 years old and a member of the Yankton Sioux Tribe of South Dakota, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And your father is Chief Blue Star Eagle, and you descend from a long line of spiritual men and chiefs. You have spent much of your youth growing up on the island of Kauai, immersed in Hawaiian culture at Kanui Kapona Charter School in Anahola. You're a sophomore now, and you're a Tahitian drummer, a fire knife dancer with a hula halau o Leilani Rivera. You're passionate about Lakota, Dakota culture, and as well the Hawaiian culture, and protecting the rights of indigenous people throughout the world. You've been recognized, and you have the feathers you carry as a youth leader who speaks for the seventh generation and the next seven generations. Journey, you've been very involved in Bill 2491 on Kauai. I saw you speak wonderfully, and I have to just say you did a great job to the whole Performing Arts Center. You spoke powerfully several months back. But you are present and testifying nearly at all those hearings, and you've been one of 18 youth from around the world on the Rising Youth for Sustainable Earth Youth Council. You're also on the Committee for Indigenous Rights. This past summer, you were invited to the White House for the first White House Tribal Youth Gathering, where you both represented Kauai and your tribe, the Lakota tribe, as a youth leader. You were able to meet with key White House heads of energy, science, and the Environmental Protection Agency and more. You're taking part in breakout sessions on Native sovereignty and the environment. You advocated for the Hawaiian people with the White House Director of Science on the 30-meter telescope of Mauna Kea, bringing to the attention of the White House the fact that this telescope site sits on land sacred to the Hawaiian nation. You also brought to the White House attention the serious issues with pesticides on the west side of Kauai. You are the founder and youth director of Earth Guardians for Kauai and president and founder of the Kauai Native Youth Council. You are one of President Obama's National Generation I Youth Ambassadors. So you have done some really amazing things. So you don't have to talk about that. I just did talk about it. But now... tell me what you've got going on with this lawsuit, and then you can speak to other things too. But this lawsuit to the federal government is a first thing. So what do you have to say on that?
So I'm guessing a lot of you are already familiar with the lawsuit itself, right?
Most people probably are not. They okay. probably are unfamiliar with it.
So me and including 20 other youth from around the world, we're suing the federal government for not taking action on climate change and to find alternatives to green energy and the move away from fossil fuels to lower carbon emissions.
Okay, and then so you turned it in. Actually, I need to say we're at the top of the hour. You're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox. Speaking with me right now is Journey Maniwanji Zephyr, And we're going to be learning more about this lawsuit. Alan Parakini is in here, so is Uncle Takisan Toma, and we have Amani and Rainbow, other youth from in here. Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com or 639-3456.
So mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So there's a number of kids who are involved in this. I shouldn't call you guys kids because you're almost adults. As I would say, emerging adults.
Yeah.
And the essence of the message that you're putting forth with this lawsuit is holding the government responsible for the theft of your future. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And it reminds me a little bit about what was the argument with Pohakuloa, where they're saying Hawaii State isn't doing a good job at maintaining the crater up there. So this is focused primarily on the fossil fuel industry?
Yeah.
Okay, and then so tell me what happened once this. I saw that there was some intervener status that went in there. What did the intervener status, what does that mean, and who put in an intervener? You were telling me about it on the phone, like which you got the, you were actually very proud about it. I know it's a little hard when you go on the air because people get a little shy, but it was a whole bunch of big companies. Which companies were they?
624 companies in total. The Koch brothers. No, sorry. I think I got that wrong. But, yeah, a total of 624 companies.
Like Exxon, Mobil, you
yeah,
know.
Shell and everything.
So what does that tell you when they do that?
They wanted to intervene with the lawsuit because they said themselves that it was a threat to their business if this passes.
What does it ask for? Why do they feel threatened?
To lower carbon emissions and to find an alternative or move away from fossil fuels and greener energy.
Mm-hmm. Were there
is this in federal court? And if so, where?
Oregon.
Yeah.
It's in the Oregon Federal Court.
Okay.
And then maybe, Alan, you would know this. Like, how do we know when it is accepted?
Well, the federal court in the Ninth Circuit, which is the circuit we're in, has a pretty good computer data system. You do have to sign up to be able to get documents. It's a little bit cumbersome, but all of the court calendars and all of the documents in any federal case are public and they are available online. I'll grant you it takes a little patience to figure it all out. You have to have what they call a PACER account. Talk to me offline. I'll be happy to explain it to you.
And it looks like here, you know, I'm looking on the website, which is called ourchildrenstrust.org, and that it looks like it is accepted. There's a summary of the complaint. There's quite a lot of information in here. And there is a world-renowned climate scientist named Dr. James E. Hansen, who's serving as guardian for these future generations, and his granddaughter is among them. But these complaints assert that in causing climate change, the federal government has violated the youngest generation's constitutional rights to life, liberty, property, as well as failed to protect essential public trust resources. Alan, how does that resonate with you? Is that a viable claim?
I don't know if it's a meritorious claim. It's certainly a well-stated claim. A question I had is this coordinated at all with the Paris Climate Summit that's been going on the last few weeks?
It is, actually. I can't say the name of Martinez. What's his first name?
Chicotl.
Say it one more time.
Chicotl.
Chicotl Martinez, who has been very active speaking. He's there at the Paris Climate Change, and he was with you in Washington, D.C. this summer, correct?
I believe that he had a family ceremony, but he was supposed to show up, and I didn't get to meet him.
Okay, because he's part of the Earth Guardians, and he was actually at the Bioneers Conference when I was there, and he's been speaking all over the place, but it looks like when I'm glancing at this, it is mostly American youth who are speaking on this, but what we see is it comes from a very wide range of ethnicities. So it is a big group and blend of people who are working on this. And so what responsibility do you have in this process? I mean, are the kids engaged in the discussion of what's happening, or is this largely the dad or the grandfather of the one girl that is pushing the issue?
It's kind of half and half. We do have meetings and talk about what our next action should be, or talk about what's going on, fill us in and stuff. So.
And you have the Native Youth Council here on Kauai.
Yeah.
And we have Amani in here, too. And Rainbow. I know she just pointed away. Like, sometimes people get quiet. Do either one of you want to share something about what your Native group is working on? Amani?
Don't hold back.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
And put your face right to the microphone.
Well, we have been, since it's Thanksgiving, or since it's been around Thanksgiving, we were going around to the different schools on the island. We went to Hanalei, and we went to a school in Anahola, which we all go to.
Kanui Kapono.
And we were sharing with students what the real Thanksgiving is and what Native Americans' perspective on Thanksgiving is.
And it's a little different than the...
Very different.
Very different. And so, in summary, what is the biggest difference between how we are taught as an American story of what Thanksgiving represents and maybe what that bounces against with reality at the time?
Well, to me, the biggest difference was that we're told that everyone had a big feast together.
Yes, that it was a happy thing working together.
Yeah, but really, it wasn't. And really, the Native Americans were killed, and their food was stolen, and then they had a feast. It wasn't like a, happy feast.
That's different.
It's quite different.
Yeah,
it's quite very different. Journey, you have your eagle feathers with you. Could you want to tell us about those?
The eagle feathers that I have were given to me from my dad in a ceremony when I went to Washington. We stopped in Colorado with some friends and family, and my dad handed down some traditional regalia to me for the actions that I did in 2491 and everything else that I did.
Yes, and when you spoke at the Performing Arts Center, you were extremely powerful. Do you remember the essence of what that message was? Or do you have something that you want to share with the listener about what is important to you as not only a youth of Kauai, but also representative of the indigenous youth? How do you look out at what is the future?
The future for my generation and the next seven generations,
that's
I guess?
That's correct.
Okay. So, I'm sure that everybody has a child or a family member that you would like to protect. So just think about them when you're making a decision or an action that could lead to the future. Or it's kind of hard to word, but if it has a long-term effect on the future, think about how it would affect your children, their children's children, and the next seven generations.
And if you could wave a magic wand and be able to impact one particular aspect of how our culture functions, is there something that you could point at?
If I had that power.
If you had that power. If you had the power to make the change that you would like to see, which way would you change it?
The understanding of what it is. Or the, for people to understand what the perspective of other people, of what it's like to be them, or, yeah, perspective, kind of. Sympathy or empathy.
So you're talking about the basic mindset and maybe even for the cultures. We have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha. So I just had a question for Journey and also for Rainbow. And what motivates you in regards to being engaged and engaging your peers? And maybe you can engage some of the adults in the booth in regards to your perspective as an emerging leader, but also as the generation that inherits the mess that the previous generation is creating. I know that there are in our community folks that are all rah-rah and cheerleaders, and they just, you know, can't speak highly enough about the GMO technology and the fact that GMOs are going to save the world from hunger and famine and feed the poor people and allow farmers all the tools and technologies. But what is it about the work that you see that needs to be done from people all over the globe in regards to rising up and saying enough is enough, and we get back to our traditional ways and the roots that will sustain us and allow us to thrive in the future? Thank you.
Thank you. So what would you say to your friends? Like, if you're talking to your peers, and as we, like Alan and I were speaking of, is it's really important for people to show up, because when people don't show up and they wait for somebody else to stand forward for them, sometimes that person looks like they're in there all on their own. If you were trying to encourage your peers to be aware of what's going on, what would be your message to them?
Understanding. To understand the topic or to research what it is and to basically understand what's going on. Because a lot of people don't know what a GMO is, right?
Yes, in that example.
Yeah. And
yeah, and it's important to understand what negative and positive effects are on each thing that you need to, like, understand.
Yes, there's quite a lot of different elements in there. I know I've seen really powerful testimony from both of you on these things. I want to also bring up my friend John Trudell, who was with the American Indian Movement. He is also Lakota, and he is in his passing now, I believe. He has left this life, and so I want to honor him as really an incredible man. And your mother's in here. Erica, did you know John? She didn't know John. John was the roommate of one of my friends when I would go and stay on the mainland, and he was not at Wounded Knee. He was very close friends with the other people in that, but with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, he helped storm that area, and they took siege on Alcatraz Island. He had been really calling attention to some different problems, and something that had happened is when he was coming against them, and there was many people being killed on the reservations, and his wife, pregnant wife and children, were burned to death in their house, and the doors had been nailed shut and the windows had been nailed shut, And that's what really activated him, because he was so powerfully injured by the loss of his family and his mother-in-law in the most horrific of ways. And that was really a consequence for speaking out. So then he just never stopped speaking out after that. And he, you know, had so much sadness that, you know, he didn't care what they did to him. And he became, he became a poet and spoken word, and he made a very large difference.
We just had a caller, Felicia, who wanted us to wanted to let us know that John is alive.
So I saw that, but I like the person who let me know that he wasn't was the roommate.
Well, she said she's a very good friend. So
okay, all right. Does she want to talk on the air? So he's still.
She didn't.
Okay. Well, if you're listening, can you please tell him that Felicia gives her love deeply and appreciation? Because for me, when I met him, I was 28. And I grew up near all the reservations, and I knew that a lot of wrongs had happened. But he put that awareness in me to be looking as not just the people on the reservations. The people on the reservations are like the canary in the coal mine. But really, the same coercion and the same choices are really happening to the rest of us, just much more subtly. And so we become like sheep. That's my word, not his word. But John, if you can listen, I love you. So he has made such a powerful difference, and he speaks truth to power. He's been, you know, in the most joyful way, actually, in movies and working with Amnesty International and different songwriters all over. He does spoken word, and I think that there's a really a powerful rising up. There's a lot of challenges that happen on the reservation. You've lived on the reservation before, yes?
Yeah, when I was really little. I don't remember much, but yeah, I did used to live on a reservation.
And your mom took you guys away because it was difficult there, right? I'm getting these nods.
Yeah.
What's the core challenge there? No. Okay. So there's a lot of things that are difficult there. And so that is one of the issues that had kind of come up with this Na'il Puni vote and those issues. As many of the Hawaiian people, they look at the efforts that are being made to put them in a nation within a nation status with the Department of Interior. And it gives them the rights of the Native American community, but that is not a community that most people want. You know, that there are some benefits, but they're largely a taking. And the area that I grew up in, like even where the Apache Reservation is, once you get that reservation, it's supposed to be yours. But recently they did this Oak Flats. They just did a big land swap. So they take that sacred mountain that's within the reservation, and that will, they've already, you know, they're taking the top off, and it'll eventually be a deep pit mine. And there's just a real disconnection between the land and the people on it and the spiritual aspect of it. And what gives me hope is I see people all over the place waking up. I know I am one of those who have woken up. I'm in the process of waking up. And one of those awakening me was John. But it's been a slow process where I have been one who's deeply believed in our system, and especially this radio show wakes me up as I listen to the different guests and the different callers and the things that bring it up. And Taki-san Toma, who is in here, I had met you, and you spent 50 years in Washington, D.C. Tell us a little bit about your history and what has motivated you to take the life choices that you're making right now.
Let me take an observation of what is most important from the vantage of retirement. I have been retired for 20 years. What has motivated me is what I see going around in the world, in a microcosm, what's happening in Hawaii in regards to Malama Aina is happening all over. So this is why I came back and met Felicia and others like her, people that are motivated to be good stewards of the Aina. And, you know, in Hawaii, we have an incredible opportunity. Those of you who haven't paid attention or listened to your kupunas, please listen. The truth is that Hawaii is one of those places that can be the pico of the world, meaning that it can be a center of new life, new hope, so many advantages here. We can grow food 12 months of the year. We don't have to import 90% of the food from California or bananas from Ecuador. We grow our own bananas here. If you now visit the farmer's market on every island, okay? So Malamada Aina means that you have to, all of us, community-wise, have to reach out and be good stewards. We can't wait for the state, the county, the council, and the federal government to give us a handout. It's too late, folks, too slow. We have to act, be pono and act. And my observation is that as I go through life, and I've been around quite a number of years, I observed that we've had so many incredible coincidences, or maybe it's not coincidence, of people that care to come here because they realize in a microcosm, this actually is a picture of what can happen to the beautiful world that's God's creation. His creation, that mankind, in the name of prophets, are basically pillaging and raping and plundering. Let me give you an example. 200 years ago, Captain Vancouver brought cattle, bulls and cows, to the Big Island to give to chief, probably King Kamehameha. So this cattle was released 200 years ago, and guess what? The offsprings are running wild on the upper slopes of Mauna Kea. You say, really? Yes, because I was up there a year ago. And what's happening is that there's a movement on the Big Island of all kinds of groups, and what we're trying to do is restore the core forest. Where the cattle, wild cattle went up, it went up because what happened over time is that people came in the name of prophets and pillaged and plundered sandalwood for the Chinese merchants. That was like over 150 years ago, and also plundered all the core. And guess what happened to the undercover, the cover, and the watershed? It got pillaged and plundered. So on the Big Island, if you're fortunate enough to go to some of these ranches, including Parker Ranch, all you got left on the upland is Kikuyu grassland. That is not the native forest. The native forest was koa forest, sandalwood, which we don't see anymore. So this unique group that I was invited to join a year ago, they've gone about leasing a land from Kukuyao Ranch, which is located near Honoka on the west side of the Big Island, and they lease long-term 1,100 acres. And the amazing thing that happened here is like a lot of things happening in Hawaii, is that they're about restoring the koa forest. And at this point, as I talk to you, 500,000 seedlings or thereabouts have already been planted and growing and flourishing. That tells me something, as a person interested in nature, that it is where the koa forest belongs.
And you're also, you're doing, when I went over to Oahu, he's been helping me a little bit with some of the testimony and things that I do there. You showed me Mark's Farm. What's Mark's Farm called?
It's part of Luluku Farmers Association.
And it's pretty amazing. It's kind of like a waipa, but more intensive and smaller.
Yes, and the amazing thing is surrounded by suburbia. But actually, if you look from his farm, if you look towards the koala, the foothills of the koala, this is on the west side. And it is in ancient times called Kulau Poko. So if you look from Mark's farm, you look towards the mountains to the west. It's just like you're in Hanalei. And folks, this is on Oahu. If you don't believe this, you just get in contact with Felicia. She'll contact me and I'll put you on a tour. You'll be shocked. This is Oahu.
Well, it is really beautiful. It's a little pocket there, and it is kalo, lo'i kalo, and all kinds of just
ulu,
and then he does medicines. He does all kinds of teachings. I saw what you're doing at Castle High School, another whole agriculture lessons elements. You grew up in Waipahu on the plantation, correct?
That's correct.
And
78 years ago, sorry.
And I want to. Okay, you just gave your age away. You were even there. You were even there for World War II start. Yesterday was the anniversary of the bombing of Pearl Harbor.
I saw it. I saw Pearl Harbor. And folks, let me tell you something. If you talk about a nightmare, people talk about in religion nightmare. I lived through one. I'll never forget it.
And being of Japanese ancestry, I mean, you were lucky enough that you guys didn't get put in a camp, but you had that experience, which is a little bit like what we're talking about with the Muslim issue. We have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hey, look, I have a question because I've always been, I just heard what you were talking about, the koa and the sandalwood on the Big Island, and it's always the impression that, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Anyway, it's always been my impression that it was King Kamehameha who sold out the sandalwood and the koa. Am I wrong about that? Or is that just a cheap story?
It's more,
or is that a...
Actually, it's more complicated than that, ma'am.
It's more complicated.
It's a combination because actually, you know, unless you talk to Kupuna, because all these, what you're saying is not written history. It's oral. It's like all indigenous people. These kinds of facts are oral. It's not written down. So if you say you're going to prove it, it's hard to prove. But let me suffice this. If you heard my story, what happened was, for example, like the cattle and the
reason.
Yeah, okay.
But I think what she's saying, and I'll get probably in
and
trouble for saying this.
I'm not blaming him or anything. I'm just, it was my understanding from what I just heard that it was an outsider who sold off the sandal tree, the sandalwood, and the koa. But I've always been under the impression that it was, and I'm not blaming the king for doing that. You know,
well,
I don't know what his motives were.
So, caller, I think it is somewhere in, you know, he had a role in it. You know, he absolutely had a role in it, and there was some real strong, powerful trade-offs that happened and got military equipment and vanquished his, conquered his neighbors. So, yes.
Oh.
There was a trade, and so that, I have to be careful when we get yelled at over this one. But, okay, thank you so much.
Okay, bye.
So, what have you seen on Kauai?
Well, I tell you, Kauai is, I love Kauai because it's my kind of activism, you know. For example, you've got the, Waipa Foundation, that, group of young people, probably not much older than Journey here, they were given a responsibility of guarding a, 1600 acre Ahupua system. And it's taken them 30 years, but they hung in there. So they raised money by harvesting, cooking, steaming taro, and then
grants.
And then every Thursday, even now, they would process the steamed taro and make it into 1,000 pounds of poi or more and distribute it locally.
Yep, and we had the Kalo Festival this last weekend, and you've seen like a whole network of different nonprofits and just individual efforts that are working to Malama Aina.
Yes. And also I ran into this professor of what's happening in Kauai activism.
His name is Sherrod?
Yeah, Professor Sherrod. And he's taken on a new project of promoting the culture of Ulu, which is breadfruit. And folks, if you don't know, all you got to do is look on Google. And Ulu is one of the superior tropical food starches, just like taro is. And ulu is better than the sweet potato or the regular potato that we eat. It does everything that these starches would do, and it's gluten-free. And you can put it. So Professor Sherrod is taking upon himself, and I think there's a connection between what he believes in, and there's a movement going on in the state, on all the islands, but particularly through the National Tropical Botanical Garden.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox, and that's Takisan Toma. We showed you the 75 acres that we got going on in Kilauea.
Yes, that's another incredible thing. I think it's like a gold farm program, and also it's going to be a community garden, but I mean, the way
the community farm.
Yes, the community farm. But the way it was done is miraculous because I've been waiting to see on Oahu or other islands, and there's like sort of like a small effort, but it dies off. But anyway, he was in Kauai, and this, I'm not sure exactly how long this project is, but the beauty of this is like up to 80 acres. It's already fenced in through the community efforts of Yoshi, and he's one of the leaders, and the Kilauea community. And they've gone to the Kauai government, and gotten grants. And again, it's another example of activism positive, where people that want to farm have a chance.
It only took 30 years.
Yeah, it was like a,
amen.
It was a developer in the past that had to actually give up. It was 90 acres. It got kind of argued down to 75. But in exchange for being able to put little ag lot parcels for sale there, and then it was given, basically that was, it went to the government. And it's been 30 years, and finally the neighborhood association was able to work with the county to turn it over to self-governance up in our Kilauea area. And the state is coughing up some cash for that, the Department of Agriculture.
But I think they still haven't settled the issue of there's no water available on that tract. And that's obviously something that has to be worked out. And bureaucratically, you have to wonder, why is it so hard to do that? But at the moment, unless it's changed, you may know more about this than I do. But
I could answer it.
I think there's still no guaranteed water supply for it.
Well, five water mains have been purchased, so there is five waters thing. But it's just like the 5/8 of an inch, you know, just like what goes to a house. So it's not large amount of water. Our surface water system, in those 30 years, we had an Owai system. And it took forever for this to happen. And so the person who had ownership of the Owai allowed people who were along the ditch to buy that portion of the ditch and have a larger yard or put a second house up for a family member. It is a course of taking too long. And I think that the farm's going to need to be very strategic in how I'd like to see it permacultured out so it doesn't need so much water. I can speak to it because I live a block from it, and Taki-san, he's seen my yard. I'm able to manage it without watering because of utilizing a permaculture style and picking the right plants. It's actually thriving in a very wet space. Yes, Taki-san?
Again, on Kauai, you've got all the resources necessary. Now, of course, you've got red tape going there, but as some of our speakers and people in here, it takes patience, but you have to charge for it, no matter how long it takes. If it's porno, I say do it. You know, it's going to take for example, this Waipa Foundation took them 30 years to get the field kitchen. So, folks, it is not a matter of it's going to happen. The community has to make it happen, okay? And as Felicia said, use a technique like permaculture. And then what they did was an amazing thing is when they cut the forest down to clear this land, they chopped up all the forest debris and made a mulch out of it. So this is going to be fertilized, and this is what keeps the moisture on the soil. So this is the kind of way you treat a project like that. Now, in Kaneohe, we have an advantage, but again, it's a layer and layer working through bureaucratic changes. But we've got all the water we need, but there's all this red tape we have to go through. And the project that we want to continue, just like on Kauai, the 90 acres, or 70 acres now, is full of red tape, but we're going to move forward. We're going to go imua. That's all we can do at the community. We're not waiting for Uncle Sam or whoever else to pitch in. We're going to do it on a shoestring. And if enough of the community gets involved, these kinds of cool farms or community gardens, or whatever it takes, can get done.
So, do you have something you wanted to say, Alan?
No.
Okay. Kauai Farmers Union United, tomorrow night, 6 p.m. at Anahola Clubhouse. That tends to really address the organic farmers. They don't have to be that, though, but that is at Anahola Clubhouse tomorrow night. The Kauai Food Force Celebration 3rd Year Anniversary is this Sunday, 10 to 1 p.m. There'll be a mini seed and plant exchange. And a lot of that is about building community. Regenerations is a big contributor in that. Other efforts for building community this Thursday, two things from more the business side. The Kauai Visitors Bureau is having a lunch, and the Chamber of Commerce is having a dinner. So, you know, all different kinds of layers of what we have are working on things. I'm going to put you on the spot, Taki-san.
Yes.
Because I was listening on the last show, and they were speaking about a chemical called N-List Duo and changing the parameters of what is safe. That is the federal the Environmental Protection Agency. And on the last show, we looked at how the Hawaii Department of Agriculture takes the label from the national regulations on two of the pesticides that are used on this island, and they relax the standards when it says can't be sprayed in more than 10 miles an hour. Well, for Hawaii, it can't be sprayed for more than 20 miles an hour. And, you know, we were seeing comparing the two labels to where here when, the label doesn't meet the criteria of the application, that they simply change the label. So as a regulator in the Environmental Protection Agency, are you okay with answering a question on that?
Absolutely not. You don't put any kind of pesticides or anything with fertilizer that you're going to take care of a large acreage you put it in the absence of drift, meaning the wind, okay? Actually, practically speaking, if you're going to spray anything, and what did they water down to, 20 miles an hour?
Yeah, they made it 20, they doubled it.
That is ludicrous.
But why does the EPA, why are they able to just make seemingly shifts? You know, we saw that too with how much radiation is tolerable. Once after Fukushima happened, they ratcheted it up by like a factor of 10. Did you follow that, Alan?
To a point.
Yeah, it's like you go, oh, well, all right, it's different. Well, we'll just change the standard.
Would you like the hard and straightforward answer?
Well, yeah. I mean,
it's the power and the money and the greed being corporations.
So as a regulator in there, how were you influenced?
Well, there's a lot of pressure all the way in all the executive offices. The constituents call. You've got senators and congressmen with the constituents and the ones that are powerful, and they got this skilled lobbyists. I think these lawyers should be working for us as environmental lawyers instead of pocketing the loose change or the money from this corporation and representing falsehood. So you get all this combination of pressure, and lots of people buckle, unfortunately.
Did you buckle? I mean,
No.
Okay.
I stood fast. Consequently, I don't think I rose too far. But anyway, I can sleep peacefully that I did my job.
So when you come back to Hawaii, when you worked in Washington, D.C., and you worked on these regulations, did you there have practical, like you were talking to me about the spirituality between the people and the land, and that was when we were discussing Malama Aina, that was the essence of Malama Aina, is the spirit of the land and the people and every piece of it. Was that something on your, I used the term before, dashboard when you were in Washington, D.C.?
I think it took maturity before I got to that point. But I was learning the hard, cold, dirty facts, or the truth anyway. And it's hard to stomach. But actually, if one has a conscience and one is thinking portal, you have to do what's right. Not only for the country itself, but do what's right for the people. We are part of the people. They are us. We are them. So anything you do in regards to, in his case, I was working for Uncle Sam as an analyst at the EPA. You have to do what's right. And you can't do something because you're going to get promoted. But it's very hard to do. Most people, truthfully speaking, buckle. Well, look at all these lobbyists. They should be lobbying for us. As somebody mentioned on the radio, you can't find a lawyer. Well, guess what? The power of money. So I think when you talk about Malama Aina, all this is addressed in the fact that we're serving the people of the community. And in turn, people of the community serves us. So, but to do this is very hard in today's culture because of we've been driven by corporate greed, or greed per se. Money is the pursuit, material things. I think if you follow Malama Aina, you understand all this. In fact, it goes back to every indigenous people, including the Native Americans, including the Hawaiians before contact, It's the same thing. You do it right, it works. And it involves being a good steward of the land.
And everybody is indigenous to somewhere at some point in history. So everybody is an indigenous person. But what defines an indigenous person is that you still are basically living within the region that your people, your ancestors, you know, came from, and that still holding some of those cultural practices. We're getting close to the end of the show. It looks like Richard Fernandez is going to be doing the jazz this evening. Do you all have questions for each other or callers at 826-7771 or even Mom over there? If you know, she's saying no. Do you guys have any cross-dialogue that you, because you, we haven't had that too much. Does either of you have questions for each other?
A question for Journey would be, do you know what is up next, what in the near future, what's going to happen with this case? And I meant to observe when you were talking or that if you got 625 interveners petitioning, you certainly got their attention. Sounds sarcastic, but
that's
it's true.
That's significant, right?
It is. That's my point.
Effort, yeah.
That's my point. So is there a hearing coming up? Is there what exactly is the status of the case at the moment, and what should we look for to develop in it?
Do you guys have that? Because I'm pulling it up if you don't. Do you have it?
What are you asking for? That was another question I had.
Right. I'm curious as to whether the reductions in emissions that the lawsuit is asking for go beyond what's being negotiated in Paris right now.
Exactly.
So what you got there, Felicia? Oops. Should I get on the...
Okay, there we go. Yeah, why don't you look it up? It's on ourchildrenstrust.org. There is, you know, quite a bit of information right here, and it does say that it is going to court in Oregon. And I had a friend that made a response from, I won't mention the name of the company, but he works for a fracking organization, and he develops the fracking equipment. He's just said, oh, they'll throw it out, right? But I'm not so sure. And it's you know, when I see all those people going in for intervener status, that tells me that somehow this lawsuit is going for the jugular, that is actually hitting a real issue. And to me, it's a legitimate claim. When we even, you know, I mean, how they can really solve those things is kind of like trying to speak their own language. When we look at the craziness of all this debt that's going on, you know, how do you sue somebody for having too much debt, right? I mean, it becomes a circular argument, but it does seem that this has leveled a statement that is in the direction of, you know, what's possible. Do you see that there?
You know, my connection is slow.
It sounds like very creative lawyering, if nothing else, by the lawyers who are representing you. It's an interesting theory that they're putting forward. It obviously got the attention of a number of corporations. That's from your perspective, a good thing.
Here's the federal government defendants. In the defendants in the case is the president, the Office of the President, the Department of Energy, Interior, Transportation, Agriculture, Commerce, State, Defense, and the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency. Each of these defendants knowingly contributed to dangerous levels of CO2 emissions in our country. Each defendant has an important role in solving our nation's climate change crisis. And so that kind of pulls in what Uncle Taki-san said about even having been on the EPA and being forced to buckle when they know that some of these things aren't exactly right, it's going, all right, we're going after these departments, just as at Pohakuloa, they went after the Board of Land and Natural Resources for saying, hey, you're not being a responsible landlord. And the facts in the complaint says the defendants have known since at least 1965 that the CO2 emissions from the combustion of fossil fuels would create dangerous climate change with enormous and harmful impacts for future generations. Now, we have looked at this before, and Exxon had funded a study in the 70s, and it was very evident in there. And it wasn't that they decided to hush it up, but somehow they lost the funding to continue the study. It sounds questionable, but they at least had, in seriousness, wanted to look if they were doing damage. I think when it became evident that they were, it became less important, perhaps, to continue that. Maybe they were looking to see that they didn't. But, this is saying that this is threatening the plaintiff's life, liberty, property, and the very rights our founding fathers set out to protect in our Constitution. We have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you for holding.
Yeah, aloha.
Aloha.
I'm just really curious about that whole climate change trip. Why are all the green people so adamant against stopping CO2 that the plants all breathe?
Okay.
Plants breathe CO2.
Yeah,
that's what
right.
Makes them live
but when we're cutting all down the plants, right? We're cutting down. We're wholesale bringing down forest after forest. Indonesia is on fire at an absolute crisis level. So the plants aren't there to suck up that CO2.
Why are all the green people, all the green, make everything green? Why are they so adamant about getting, killing, stopping all the CO2 that feeds the plants? That's all.
Okay, thank you.
Maybe it would have something to do with the Chinese government closing the schools in China because of the smog. It's evidently they introduced an alert level yesterday that has never occurred before in China. And
really?
Finally, the Chinese government is admitting what everyone's known for a very long time. And they're closing schools and closing down systems in places like Beijing. It's the last couple of days. It's just an amazing development. You see photographs of people in China. The smog is so bad that you can hardly see cars during the day.
Right.
Which is that link, I think, really undermines an argument that reductions in emissions aren't necessary, because take climate change aside, we've got to stop polluting the atmosphere. You don't even have to believe in climate change.
Exactly.
Well, maybe
exactly
the caller
right.
was more concerned about, looking at the distinction between carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide. Carbon monoxide that comes out of the back end of a car is a lot worse than carbon dioxide. I know that when we're talking about a creative angle, even though you maybe didn't like the charter amendment that came up before, the argument behind it, I thought, was an extraordinary change, because it says, have these companies prove they're not doing harm. And if they aren't, then go ahead, carry on. And because they say, hey, we're not doing any harm, it shouldn't be a problem. It shouldn't be a problem. They could test the soil, they test the air, test the water. Hey, no harm. Great. Continue to do the work. That was the essence of what that piece was. We'll take that after this call. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha, Felicia. I was just listening to the last guy, and he seems like his comment was, what's the big deal about, the green people trying to slow down the CO2 emissions. And when I looked at it, there's one fact that really hit me pretty hard, is that 98% of all the climate scientists in the world agree that man has had huge impact on the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere. So, that's pretty hard to argue. So that's all I wanted to say, but great discussion.
Thank you.
Okay, aloha.
Speaking of cutting down the plants, that's a part of the agreement being hammered out in Paris that's actually very exciting to me, is that countries with their forests being, wholesale cut down have long said, we'll stop this, but you've got to pay us. And finally, it looks like they're going to get paid. They're going to start paying countries to stop destroying their forests.
Yes, because we're looking at that cycle. The plants eat the carbon dioxide, and they put off oxygen. The people create carbon dioxide, or animals create carbon dioxide, and they breathe oxygen. But the thing is, it's a thing of balance. You need the right number on either side of it, and it's been in balance for a long time, but we're accelerating that and making it out of balance by eliminating a lot of the plants, and then burning up fossil fuels, which is basically like stored sunlight from the past.
And isn't it strange that every single Republican candidate for president doesn't believe this is happening? I just think it's marvelously ironic and a statement that actually needs no more elaboration. How can they possibly not recognize this?
Well, I've seen people make good arguments that there is galactic things that are influencing it, but I go, okay, I can't argue with the sun or Jupiter or the photon belt, but we definitely can make a difference in not doing so much monocropping, by having more polyculture, by keeping farms going, by keeping trees going.
Planting more trees.
I mean, there are so many things that we can do, and like putting trees in cities and putting permeable surfaces where we park, where we drive. You know, there's so many things that we can do. So we can say it's more than just one input. Maybe it's more than just human-caused change. But let's fix the human-caused change. Let's start there.
Well, that's all we can influence.
Yeah.
Over time, there's a history of cycles of warming and cooling. That's inarguable. So the question is, we have to sort out how much of what's happening now is natural and how much of it is an added effect of what we've done. We can only control what we do, and we should.
That's correct. So I am going to – do you have – the caller have something to say?
You know, you just wanted to make a point about slaughtering animals. I asked him if he wanted to come on the air, and so
saying it's not good to slaughter animals, or
I believe
it is?
It's not good to slaughter animals. I'm not sure.
Well, certainly in the CAFOs that we have, I will say on Kauai, humans are the natural predators for the sheep and the goats and some of these animals that
and
were
the
introduced
pigs.
And the pigs. I meant to say that, and the pigs that were introduced, and so. It pulls out of balance again, and we have a lot of damage. Democracy Now!, which we play on this show, is really doing a lot to cover some of the national elements. I was going to play Amy Goodman in just a second. Aloha, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just get one more quick comment to make.
Okay.
About compare how much... difference and how much volume of, whatever you're talking about, influence in the atmosphere. One major volcano going off, like they're going off like crazy in South America. How much one volcano, how many people, how many SUVs would it take to compensate, to match what one volcano does to the atmosphere?
Well, let me give you that one, but we can also look at is all the actions that we take for our hyper-consumerism that definitely does a lot to cause extinction from different animals.
Hey, well, compared to how much, that's what I'm saying, how much does that compare to one volcano going off?
Well, it doesn't compare because,
exactly.
No. I mean, animals don't go extinct because of that volcano going off. Animals go extinct because of all our extractions as the result of that.
Well, I beg to differ.
Okay,
anyway,
thank you. Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, I mean, if we get enough volcanoes exploding, they say that did send us into an ice age once before.
Yeah,
so,
it did.
Yeah, I mean, that could be real messy.
There was that volcano in Malaysia in 15-something, or that
Krakatoa? You're talking Krakatoa?
No, I don't think so. It changed the global climate, and in those days, there without communications, they had in Europe, they had no way of knowing why the sun wasn't shining for a year and a half.
Right. So, I was going to play Amy Goodman really quick because we are always trying to raise a little bit of funds for KKCR.
Aloha, listeners of KKCR. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour, urging you to support Kauai Community Radio. As a beacon of free speech, KKCR has been broadcasting from their jungle shack and building community in the island since 1997. KKCR brings you Hawaiian culture and music, independent voices and choices like Democracy Now!, otherwise shut out from the corporate media. During this program, please show your love for KKCR by making an investment in the station that loves you and become a sustaining member. Your monthly support at any level will pay dividends all year long and ensure the continued success of Kauai Community Radio. From our family at Democracy Now! To your ohana in the center of the Pacific, mahalo for your support. It really does make a difference.
And we appreciate all the people who do donations to this program and to this station. And I feel like Kauai Community Radio really does help Kauai stand out as very, very different than many other locations any longer in the country. So we're very lucky, and I'm always giving him a little bit of credit because he deserves some credit. Richard, who's coming up next, he is a part of what made this happen. And Uncle Taki, I appreciate how you have been a donor in the past with what you've done. And okay, so Jazz with John will be next. We're going to go around and take... we have a caller? Okay, we're going to take a quick call, and then we are going to have a very quick goodbye from each of our speakers, and we will hear the county council report, which is for tomorrow. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you for holding.
Hi, thank you so much for the show. And I just had a question, and I don't know if any of you have ever thought, you know anything about this, but I always wonder about all the oil that we're taking out from the earth and whether it might just have a purpose inside the earth. And it's something that I don't ever really hear addressed when, just in the whole topic of emissions and climate change and pollution and all of that.
If I can throw something in there, I mean, fracking is held accountable quite often for why there's been a vast increase in earthquakes in the area. Because that's happening up at a higher level. So it might be somewhat the lubricant that keeps everything moving, and they take it out, and then so we've had a substantial increase in that. So thank you so much.
Yeah. And then just to say when people... thank you.
Okay, aloha.
Okay, aloha.
We are out of time. Everybody gets a chance to just say goodbye, basically, or aloha. All right.
Please fill out the survey online for the Charter Review Commission. You can find it through the Kauai.gov website. Go to the Charter Review Commission page, and there's a link there. It's very important that as many people as possible participate in this process.
Thank you. Journey?